From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of June, 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. The RMA from the United States Department of Agriculture updated its cover crop grazing policies today, and it made some big changes. That's the only ag news story we'll cover for the day. And then we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with Mike Tenura from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, and look at the cash grain situation with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. And it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Now here are the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. July corn today up 9 cents, settled at $4.50 even. September at $4.54¾, 8.5 higher, and December up 7¾ at $4.61. The March at $4.66¼ up 7.5 cents. July soybeans 12¼ higher at $9.15½. The September at $9.28 up 12, and November beans $9.41 up 12¼. January futures up 12¼ as well at $9.53¼. The March at $9.60¼ up 12¾. Wheat futures July contract up 4¼ today at $5.26½, and the soft red hard red up 3 at $4.60½. The bean oil 22 cents higher, and bean meal up $6.10. Live cattle futures in Chicago June contract $108.17½, 32½ cents lower on the day. The August down 60 at $103.95. August feeders $1.82½ lower at $134.70. In September at $135.37½, $1.62½ lower. Lean hogs July contract down $2.37½ at $79.25. The August at $80.90, down $2.10. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to talk about the marketplace and what's been happening this week. It was a couple of rough days earlier in the week, but things managed to rally back today. Dan, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, welcome to be with you, Todd. Well, the market got terribly overbought. If you look at the technicals, a lot of these technical indicators were pretty well overbought. And I think there's only one market advisor out of 5,000 that's bearish. So everybody is leaning on one side of the market. And the market was due for some kind of correction. And that's exactly what we got. And many times, I'll kind of talk about corn here. Corn, when September corn futures, which I view now as a lead option because July is, you know, almost into expiration, the 440, 444 area was the top end of that 5-year sideways trading range on a lead futures chart. And when September futures busted through that last week, that was what I considered a breakout of that sideways pattern. And many times when a market breaks out of a pattern, it's not uncommon for it to fall back to the breakout point. And if the breakout is valid, then it finds support and regroups, and it rallies off of that spot where it broke out of. And that's exactly what we did on corn. We spent 2-3 days kind of going down. We went down to the top end of that previous congestion area, which was the point of breakout. And now today, we did find underlying support, and the market closed moderately higher or sharply higher. I don't know. I guess, you know, in today's term, I guess it's what we're going to get used to. We're going to get used to some bigger numbers. Let's put it that way. Our daily changes are going to be a little higher as we go forward. But we did put in a nice close. Now, as a technician, to really solidify that the corn market did complete a corrective move off of the high that we made, I think, on Monday night or Sunday night, is that we need to kind of follow through on that. And if we can pull and close out the week higher, it would be really nice on the technical front. And then what it does, it continues to keep that five something in the cards. If you use that congestion area, I think I maybe mentioned last week that we had as the halfway point off of the low that we had, it indicated that these corn had an upside potential of something in that 515 to 520 range. And, you know, depending upon what you use, the July or September or whatever, everything kind of pointed to kind of what I called was a 5 to 520 range in corn futures. And I think that's ultimately where we're headed. Now, if you want to use this corrective decline that we had this week, and now we closed higher, if you want to use that as a midway point, the next target really, like on these corn now here, is going to be like 494, 495. And I would suspect if we get to those levels, that will begin to offer some resistance because we're approaching that $5 barrier that we haven't been there for a long time. But I ultimately think we're going to slice through $5 and we're going to kind of stair step our way up to a level. Now, I don't know if it's going to be done emotionally or if it's going to be fairly orderly. So far, I would view this market as fairly orderly, no panic. And I think the reason is fairly orderly is because nobody really knows what they're talking about. I mean, you could almost say anything right now. It's just I got a kick out of listening to stuff on Twitter, everybody talking about 92% planted corn. And of course, nobody knows what 92% really means. Is it 92% of 93 million acres, or is it 92% of 96 million acres? Because there is upwards of 4 million acres missing from that March planting report. So planted intended corn acres could have been 95 million instead of 93. And we're not going to know none of this stuff. We may know a little bit come on that June, I don't know, is it June 27th or 28th? I think June 30th is
28th.
Yeah, yeah. June 30th is on a weekend. So we may know a little bit more there, but we're probably not going to know a whole lot more until USDA does kind of a resurvey and starts taking a look at some of the farm services data. And that earliest that could come would maybe be August. And, you know, we may not know anything until October, and then we may not know too much then until January and let them back their way out of it. I guess my question, you may be able to answer this, is on a 160-acre field of corn, if 20 acres of it is drowned out, is that going to be unharvested acres, or is that going to be averaged in on the 160?
Oh, I don't know how that counts. I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
I don't know how they survey.
Yeah, are they going to lower the yield on that?
I don't know how they survey that.
But see, those kind of adjustments won't be made until January, I think.
Well, you know, that would come from the FSA numbers. That would just be averaged in, right?
Well, if you
it's not counted anywhere.
Well, if you do a yield sample. You sample these yields out, 5-acre plots or 2-acre plots, whatever they do, and say this is what the national average yield is, or this is what the yield is in Illinois. Then all of a sudden, then they have to back out of it, because if Illinois produces X amount of bushels.
Oh yeah, but so they'll catch but they're going to catch those.
They'll catch them in January. They'll back out of it.
No, they'll catch them. No, they'll catch them before that. They'll catch them as they're surveying.
No, not the drowned out spots in a field. They won't.
Why not?
Well, I don't know if that survey asked that question. If you got 160 acres,
I don't think that's the way. No, when they go out to actually do objective surveys, I think
they might. Them. Whatever.
Because if they, it depends on it. I think I don't. I. Well, I have no idea.
All right.
I shouldn't speak out of turn. We'll ask Lance Honig that.
All right. Well, let's take a look at the soybean market. Soybean market actually had an outside reversal up today after basically one down day. And if you look at November soybeans, if you want to use this most recent, this two-day correction as a halfway point off of the most recent low. It kind of says November beans maybe have a shot at 995. So it's kind of looking like November beans may try on 990s. I think if you want to, so that would be kind of at least one objective on November beans. As you know, I still think longer term, we're doing major retracements in corn. I still think 50% retracement on the lead futures corn up around 580 is still a possibility. I mean, it's something we'll have to see how the information unfolds as we go forward. Soybeans has a tendency to do, you know, a 38% retracement to a 62% retracement, and a 38% retracement on a lead futures beans takes you to 1170 or thereabouts, let's say 1150 beans. And there's probably not one soul out there would ever think that beans could ever go back to $11. I guess we'll wait and see on that. We got a ways to go, but I would not rule that out, at least looking at it from a long-term cyclical point of view and the amount of time that we've kind of gone sideways in this bean market. I really think that when we look at monthly charts, when we look back at 19, and it may spill all the way into 20, you're going to see a big bubble there. Now, how high that bubble is, that's the one we're trying to guess right now.
Good stuff. Interesting things. Guess we have some time yet to figure it out, don't we?
Yeah. But it's interesting. Like I said, I'm not too sure we'll end up with more bean acres. I find it interesting. Yield talk as low as 20% below trend line. And if that is in play or not, I guess what, but if we have yield something like that, then we've got an altogether different supply demand table on the books. That would mean a national average yield of beans somewhere around 40 bushels, and that would change the balance sheet pretty quickly.
Hey, speaking of which, we have Chad Hart, who dropped that 135 for corn from Iowa State on Commodity Week this afternoon.
Boy, you can't get any more bullish than that, can you? 135?
No.
That has to,
should be a good show.
That has to be the low end. If he ends up being right, he's gonna be front page Farm Journal magazine in January, probably.
Probably so. We'll ask him about it this afternoon. Oh, and we're bringing Dale Durkles out of retirement after about half a week or so. He'll be with us on that show too, along with Zuzalo and Joe Vaklavic should be there. So that'll be a good show. Hey, thank you so much. And we'll talk with you again next week.
Okay, Todd.
It's always fun. And boy, this one's been a whole lot of fun. That's Dan Zwicker. He is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. In today's agricultural news, just one quick story. Farmers who planted cover crops on prevented plant acres will be permitted to hay, graze, or chop those fields earlier than November this year. The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced today USDA's Risk Management Agency, or RMA, adjusted the 2019 final haying and grazing date from November 1st to September 1st. RMA has also determined that silage, haylage, and baleage should be treated in the same manner as haying and grazing for this year. Producers can hay, graze, or cut cover crops for silage, haylage, or baleage on prevented plant acres on or after September 1st and still maintain eligibility for their full 2019 prevented planting indemnity. On this Thursday, we're now joined by Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, thank you so much for being with us. Today is the final late planting date in the bulk of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. for soybeans. And at this point now, everybody pretty much in the Corn Belt at least has passed their final planting date for that crop, though they'll keep running for a while. What does the weather look like between now and, I don't know, the next 10 days or so?
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of rain in the forecast. It seems like we talk about this every single week, and this week is no different. We do have another rain system that's going to approach Illinois later on tomorrow, and especially tomorrow night and Saturday, and then we'll see more rain on Sunday and Monday. Basically, several systems are going to move through one after another, and even though it's possible for parts of the state to escape this, we think that most of the Corn Belt is going to see 1 to 2 inches, with locally more than that over the next 4 to 5 days. So it's going to turn wetter before it starts to dry out.
What are the wettest areas across the Corn Belt, in your opinion?
Well, to start with, everybody has been wetter than normal. So there's really no area that you can look at and say, hey, they're doing great. If there is one section that is doing better than others, it's most likely from eastern Nebraska through the western areas of Iowa, because they managed to miss out on some of these big rains over the last 4 to 6 weeks. Probably the worst areas are from northern Missouri through the northwest third of Illinois, kind of that area that you were driving in, as I saw on Twitter earlier in the week. That was kind of the eastern edge of that, so pretty much from Bloomington and more so to the west. That's probably one of the worst areas. But again, everybody has been in on this. Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, South Dakota, parts of Minnesota, certainly Kansas, and that, you know, we didn't even mention Illinois and Missouri again. So just pretty much everybody has some level of problem here, just a matter of how severe.
Will we have a change in the pattern?
Well, the pattern is going to change starting on Tuesday and Wednesday. So we will see some different weather finally in 5 to 7 days from now. We'll see a big warm up. Temperatures will start popping into the 80s across most of the Corn Belt. And then we'll start to see 90s from Nebraska south. It's a little more typical of late June and early July. And some areas will even end up warmer than normal. And that's primarily from low temperatures that will only bottom out in the mid-60s to low 70s. So it's going to be a lot different in a week from now. We will see some thunderstorms with that setup. But for the most part, rain chances will be lower than the way they have been. So we think that when we're talking in a week from now, we'll be talking about how much warmer it is and how there still are some nuisance thunderstorms around, but that the coverage and scope of these storms won't be as nearly as great as what they have been.
Evaporation rates will be fast enough to dry some soils out at that point?
Well, that's a great question. I think the bigger problem with even thinking about that is that these soils are saturated going very, very far down. And that's just because it's been so wet. Keep in mind, January through June is likely to have been the wettest in more than 125 years across the 7-state region of the Corn Belt. And we can go even further back in time, start last June and go through this June. And again, it's the wettest in more than 125 years in that period, and by a huge margin, by more than 4 inches from the next wettest that was in 2010 and 2011, and somewhat similar to the Great Mississippi Flood period of 1926 to 27. So, yeah, it is going to improve. I think maybe it won't dry out that quickly because of all the water we just talked about, but certainly warmer weather will help crops start to grow a little bit faster, which is, of course, another one of the issues that we have to deal with as well this season.
It just sounds like it's going to be a messy summer.
Yeah, I mean, one of the questions that I have been getting a lot is this: what is going to be the ideal situation to get out of this problem? And there's no clear-cut answer. I mean, normally what you would like is for temperatures to turn very cool in July and for a lot of rain to fall. Of course, if that were to happen this year, we'd start flooding more of the crop and it wouldn't be a great scenario. But we'd still do want it to stay cool. I mean, you can argue that the warmer weather next week, as we discussed, is probably a good situation and will help things to start moving along. And even if that lasts into the first 5 to 7 days of July, you come to the same conclusion. That's probably not a bad thing. The only way it becomes a problem is if it starts to last beyond July 10th, 12th, 13th, maybe July 15th. If we start seeing very warm temperatures at that point in time, then all of a sudden you're going to want that heat to start backing off. So it's just a really complex scenario. But in general, the same rules still apply. You don't want a big heat wave at pollination. You don't want a big heat wave while soybeans are filling, and you want soil moisture to stay approximately normal. So however we can make that happen, that would be the best case scenario.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great one.
That, of course, is Mike Tenuri. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. We're now joined by Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, to take a look at what's happened in the cash grain marketplace. Matt, boy, what a mess this cropping season has been. How are things there on your farm?
You know, considering all things, they don't look horrible. We've had about 5 inches of rain in the last 6 days. Of course, there's nowhere for the water to go, so the ponds are toast. We pretty much know that, but it's gotten late enough that even if a person could get into them in the next week or so, as far as corn goes, I doubt that there's much that gets put in, if any. With soybeans, yeah, guys will go back in and spot the ponds in for some time, I'm sure. But, yeah, I mean, overall, I think we look okay. It's just that we know you know, that our yield potential, given the time that we put it in and the stress we've had this spring, it's going to be certainly less than what we've become accustomed to.
Can you talk to me a little bit about basis across the United States? Of course, we've watched bases in the northwestern part of Ohio, parts of Indiana really kind of jump that because they need our expectations. They'll have to have more corn out of there, and they're not going to have it into the southeast. But there are other places that haven't quite jumped yet. Do you know why this is the case?
You know, across the board, there's been some firmness for sure. Elevator systems certainly trying to source corn where they're concerned about the long-term ability to go ahead and get a hold of good corn. But yeah, some areas, you know, I've heard of an ethanol plant there in the Indiana-Ohio border area that was bidding 50 over, and one of the neighboring plants was bidding a dime over. And obviously the guys that got a dime over had their needs met. You know, they had probably had decent positions, good, decent ownership on the board, you know, and from producers. But bottom line is everyone's looking for corn. Basis is better than what it was after a dollar rally. And that's not something we typically see. And it's almost entirely due to this weather situation, given the fact that we know that there's still a fair amount of corn out there.
Any final thought before I let you go about 20 seconds or so?
Oh, I think, yeah, everybody wants to be bullish when the market's up, but we've got to remember these are better prices we've seen in a long time. Locking some of it in, it isn't a bad idea, at least on a worst-case scenario.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net, joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon, helps us wrap up this edition. Our thanks go to all the analysts that joined us throughout the day today and everybody all week long. You can always hear our programming in its entirety up on the website at willag.org. Don't forget, we'll record Commodity Week this afternoon. Our panelists will include Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles. I think that's what I'll call it at the moment. He may have something different for me later, along with Mike Zuzlow at globalanalytics.biz. Joe Vaklovic will be here from Standard Grain, and also from Iowa State University, their ag marketing specialist, agricultural economist Chad Hart. He did drop a 135 corn average for this year. We'll talk to him about that on Commodity Week. You can listen to it all if you'd like on our website at willag.org. We'll post it there by about 5 o'clock this evening, all the rest of the programming as well. Naturally, you can find us in iTunes, the Google Play Store, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and on the NPR One app. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.